This hour, as promised, we have Aaron Ironside, who's the spokesperson for Say Nope to Dope. It's a group of organisations and individuals that oppose any attempt to legalise marijuana. This is part of a series to educate and inform ourselves ahead of the October referendum regarding cannabis legislation and control bill. Legalisation and control bill. Last week, we spoke to former Prime Minister Helen Clark as a supporter of the Drug Foundation's On Our Terms campaign. And as promised, I'm joined by Aaron Ironside from the Vote No, Say Nope to Dope. He joins me now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Kerry.
Oh, good morning. Via Zoom. Excellent. Did we do Zoom with Helen last week? We did. Okay, well, hopefully this one works better this time around. Nice to hear from you. What are you so uptight about marijuana for, Aaron? A lot of people use it. A lot of people say it causes less harm than alcohol. Why should people be criminalized? Because this is their choice of drug.
Well, we want to be clear from the outset that we're not advocating for people to get a criminal conviction for simply smoking a joint. What we're opposed to is the fact that legalization actually activates commercialization. And the result of that is that the black market goes into competition with the legal market, driving the price of cannabis down. And the end result is more cannabis is sold and used than ever before, and particularly among young people who are the most vulnerable group.
A big part of what parents say, and this is something that also worked for me as well, it was illegal. I would have lost my job with the Broadcasting Corporation of New Zealand if I'd been caught with it. That kept me away from it, even though it was relatively prevalent within the media. And for parents, it's a powerful tool to be able to say, you can't use it, it's illegal. And is that perhaps one of the concerns, that it doesn't give parents, you know, the added tool to be able to say, well, it's against the law?
Well, whilst it's true that we're not waving the flag for prohibition, there is a sense in which the law does its job quite well. Because in reality, in every 12-month period, only around 15% of New Zealanders use cannabis, but 80% use alcohol.
Yep.
And so we can see that the law does a good job of deterring a behaviour among the majority of New Zealanders. And so this idea that prohibition somehow doesn't work carte blanche, we understand it has its problems, but it's doing a pretty good job of keeping most of us away from the stuff.
Mm. So ideally, what would the rules around cannabis look like for you?
Well, for us, we are wanting to see strengthening of the health and education approach to cannabis. We think it's a false choice that you can only do health and education if you legalize. In reality, we do health and education about all kinds of things in our community, like drink driving, like speeding. Those are illegal activities. And yet we educate about the harms of those. We look to strengthen those kinds of outcomes. So we agree that health and education is the answer at one end with the user. The other is to continue for the police to have to do as good a job as they can of cutting off the supply at the source and trying to deal to the black market, which after 100 years of operation is jolly tough to get a handle on.
So you would still allow them the discretion of being able to prosecute a young person or not? Or would you rather see prosecutions waived for young people in possession of joints and have that firmed up rather than relying on discretion?
Well, we understand that as a technicality, the fact that it's a soft kind of decriminalisation at the moment is something that people would like clarified. We can see the point of that. But in practice, we can see that the police, in actual fact, don't give policing energy to finding users. And they haven't for 20 years. They've said for a long time that they treat the use of drugs as a health problem. They give a pre-charge warning. They'll take your drugs off you, put them in the bin and send you on your way. They're not seeking prosecution. They're not seeking convictions. And so in that regard, we trust our police to do a good job of using discretion because they have to use discretion every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you would trust them to make the right decisions, even though it shows that young Māori are overly represented when it comes to prosecutions that are taken.
We want to be clear, those prosecutions are always as part of a bundle. The people who get prosecutions in this country for cannabis possession, it's one of many charges against them. And the possession level is deemed to be about supply, not personal use. The police simply do not arrest people who are smoking a joint. That's not been the approach for 20 years. So this idea that somehow they are targeting certain groups more than others, there's no doubt there is a great shame that Māori are being disproportionately affected in the justice system. But I'm not sure how changing a law is going to make a police officer or a judge any less racist.
So when it comes to the referendum itself, National has said if it's passed, they'll take a long, hard look at it and tighten up the law through select committee. Is that good enough for you?
We do want to see things improved. It's pretty clear that one of the laws that needs the most attention is the medicinal law. Many people don't realise that medicinal marijuana is already legal as of April 1st of this year. All of those regulations came into effect in New Zealand. So this particular debate is about recreational cannabis, not medicinal. But we can see that the medicinal law is a weak one, and we can't help but wonder why the same government that brought in medicinal marijuana put it out of reach of the sick and suffering, made it too expensive, inaccessible for those who needed it most. So it's certainly true that laws need to be improved, and the first one should be the medicinal law.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's that commercialisation again that you talk of. It then makes it very, it then does make it out of the reach of ordinary people. And then there were all the other sort of growers who thought they could just hop on the medicinal bandwagon without going through any of the tests and balances for selling medicines, thinking they could just sell it out of their backyard.
Well, the backyard's a real problem because this proposed law has you able to grow two plants per adult, a maximum of four at home. You can give away half an ounce, 14 grams of cannabis every single day to friends and family. And often that's done under the guise of medicinal, the green fairy who's just trying to help. Mm-hmm. And yet the New Zealand Medical Association opposes this referendum and says that things like the homegrown element undermines the whole idea of safety and regulation. With the plants being grown at home, they're not tetanly. The doctors are at great pains to say, look, we don't grow medicine. We don't smoke medicine because you can't monitor how much of the substance you've inhaled. We make medicine in laboratories under strict conditions, tested. And this kind of homegrown element undermines the whole idea that this is a safe way to get your hands on medicinal products. The plant is not the medicine. The products made from the plant might well be, but we're saying that that needs to be left in the hands of the doctors.
You see, the green fairies would say, man, once you put it into the labs and into Big Pharma, it just, you know, takes all the magic out of it.
Well, let's be honest. That magic is a lot of people sadly saying that the pain relief that they're on isn't working. But it's not the answer to say, well, I'm just going to get high instead of using actual regulated pain medication. And so we don't think that it's a good idea, and we can see the stats say that many medicinal users will go on to become recreational users because once they get a taste for using cannabis, they'll want to continue it long after the medical problem has gone away.
So when you're talking about tightening up the medicinal cannabis legislation, what specifically do you want to see targeted? That it's made, what, that we fund it sort of like Pharmac so it is more accessible for people to get without having to resort to the green fairy?
Well, certainly it needs to be subsidised in a greater way than it is currently. Also, more research needs to happen. We can see that a weakness of the prohibition model has been that medical research into marijuana has lagged behind because it is more difficult to test an illegal substance. So we need to learn more. But one of the problems is the medicinal benefits of cannabis are often overstated. In fact, a recent journal article in the New Zealand Medical Journal said that many of the claims of the medicinal benefits were very much overstated and that the jury was still out. So we'd like to see more research. We'd like to understand what exactly does work, which products are really effective.
All right. Can you ask about the tax take? Would the black market continue? Asks a texter. Aaron, do you, the tax take that would come from legalising cannabis, that's got to be a plus in terms of funding health and education, doesn't it?
Well, it's certainly true that money will be raised. How much money depends on who you listen to. NZIER value the entire cannabis market at $2 billion, which is why they said it would be a $490 million tax take. That's been heavily revised. And what we do know is that whatever you do gain in tax, you have to create social harm. So the Centennial Institute in Colorado have calculated that for every dollar of tax earned through cannabis sale, you have to create $4.50 of social harm.
Right. Okay. So as far as you're concerned, it's a no-brainer to generate tax from something that's going to cost that much more to repair the damage.
Well, we're saying that when you generate that money, you are causing that damage. Mm-hmm. And so we don't think there's any sense in taking tax money out of the hands of the poor, who, by the way, that's where the shops will be. They'll be in the poor suburbs. And then generating harm to fix harm. We don't make addicts to fix addicts. That's a broken way of addressing a health issue.
The thing is, though, that not all people who drink cause problems. Not all people who smoke, you know, are destructive or become schizophrenic or are any problem at all to the rest of the community. And you can see them thinking, well, why should my drug of choice be politicized and criminalized when alcohol does so much more harm?
Well, there's no doubt it does harm. There's no question about the harmfulness of alcohol. And indeed, we have to say the legal regulated alcohol that's causing a public health nightmare.
Yeah.
We don't need another public health nightmare. But what is true is that the harm that it does cause is serious to those to whom it causes. We're not suggesting that everybody is affected. What we are saying, though, is that young people are the most affected. And if they start using in their teen years, they're four times more likely to develop psychosis, they're four times more likely to develop cannabis use disorder. And the effect of legalization in every jurisdiction that we've looked at has been that the use of cannabis among young people goes up. And that's a real problem. So yes, maybe there are some users for whom it's no big whoop. But let's remind ourselves, it's no big whoop to the police either. They're not going to arrest you for smoking a joint. But meantime, legalizing opens up Pandora's box for young people, and suddenly we're going to have our hospitals and our mental health system being clogged up with young people who are having the most extreme results and effects from this high potency product that's in the market now.
I read a study that said in Canada when they legalized dope there, it was the boomers who took to it like a duck. People, you know, of my age, who had been afraid of the consequences before, now all of a sudden it was hoots, wahey, and off, rolling a spliff and seeing how you went.
Isn't that interesting? Those in the Yes campaign would say that laws don't deter behaviour, and there you are pointing out that middle-aged people were deterred as young people from using when it was dangerous, and now they were trying it for the first time as middle-aged people. But that same survey that gave you that stat, Kerry, said that there was a 27% increase in use among 15 to 24-year-olds. The very most dangerous and vulnerable group were using more than ever.